Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everybody. You're listening to Atlanta Mix Radio. Domestic Violence Outreach with Pain to Purpose, founder LaShonda Roberts. Domestic violence is at an all-time high. Why? Women are dying at the hands of the ones they're supposed to love them. Why? It's simple. Pain to Purpose, which is located in Miami, has reached out to the hearts of so many survivors. And you guys want to check in and listen in tonight with Pain to Purpose, Ms. Roberts. Welcome to the show. Sorry about the technical difficulties.
No problem. Thank you. Good evening.
Well, I tell you, we just keep having tragedy after tragedy after tragedy going on. We had a lady here. That was a postal worker that was gunned down, and the man was sitting inside the cleaners all day just waiting for her.
Mm-hmm.
And then we just had a police officer that killed his girlfriend and shot himself. She didn't pass away, but he did.
Right.
There's just so much to cover in a little bit of time. So thank you. Could you tell everybody a little bit about about Pain to Purpose in your organization?
Yes,
where you located?
Yeah, Pain to Purpose is my baby. I started this in 2015. It was started to just simply give women some hope and some encouragement, some love. Let them know that there are other women that are going through or have gone through. And I use my testimony and my life as a survivor to show them life does go on after you have to start over. A lot of women have to get away and basically start from scratch. So that's why Pain to Purpose was birthed. We take persons to the shelter, and we stuff them with hygiene products, and we give them letters of encouragement. and we give them gift cards when we can. And we just, you know, sit and we talk with them and we share our stories, we sing, we laugh, we cry, we pray with them, whatever is needed at that moment. And that's how Pain the Purpose was birthed. We've been doing it since 2015. We're in, like I said, Miami, Florida, and we've given out over 300 purses since then. And, you know, it's been going on since then, and we've kind of branched out to our teams as well to teach healthy relationships and healthy dating. I have a high school student as well as a college student, and they see domestic violence in their ages, in their age group. And that's what made me want to, you know what, I started getting abused at 15. So I have to remember that, yeah, these kids are going through the same thing. How can we reach out to them and teach them the signs and what to look for boys and girls? There are some girls that, you know, are abusers as well. Men get abused. And crazy as it may sound, a lot of young men don't think they can get abused by a girl or a woman. And they can. And we have to show them by doing interactive workshops with them and teaching them what to look for in relationships. So that's what Pain and Purpose has been doing.
Let's just jump into it. What are some of the signs that a person can, you know, look for in this situation?
Okay, well, definitely first and foremost, control. Well, let's start with something simple. Wanting to check your phone. I know people might think it's cute, you know, that your boyfriend or husband, whatever, wants to see your phone. But when they're doing it in an aggressive manner and everything that they see in your phone is ticking them off and making them upset, and now it's causing an argument each time, those are type of signs. Pay attention to what ticks them off or how often they get ticked off. Or if they switch from, you know, laughing and playing with you and to all of a sudden now they're mad because maybe you said something out of the way. You have to pay attention to their characteristics, their personalities. Like I said, whatever makes them mad or how often they get mad, what they get mad about. Some people get mad about the simplest things, and that can show a pattern of their behavior. You know what I mean? There's mental illness in people, and a lot of times you don't detect it. And I honestly feel there's a lot of – I'm sorry?
No, I said no, you don't. I agree with you.
Right, right. You don't see that. And then a lot of people don't, you know, in our culture, we tend to ignore it. And, you know, when you see your children starting to have issues as a child, as a parent, it's on you to get your child some help. Don't let that child grow up to be an unstable adult, raising families and going through life or end up in jail and prison because you didn't want to label, quote unquote, label your child. So back to noticing the signs, one of them is control. The second one is behavior. Pay attention to what they're doing, how they want to control you. When they start telling you what to wear, what to do, where to go, then they'll start isolating you from your family or telling you, you know what, Karima's not a good friend, maybe you shouldn't hang with her. Or so-and-so wasn't good, but why are you hanging with them? You know, when they start isolating you, are you going to your mom's house tonight? I want you to stay here with me. And, yeah, maybe one or two times they want you to stay with them. And then when they start seeing that you're hanging out with other people and taking that attention away from them, all those are signs and triggers that something may not be right. And you have to pay attention to that.
When people do show that, display that, is that always the because doesn't have to elevate where the violence comes in at, like people playfully try to hit you? Is that one of those, like they want to playfully hit you and things like that?
Well, that's what I'm saying. It depends on the person. You may just be dating someone that's playful. You know what I mean? There are some people that just childish, for lack of a better word, and they make you want to play a lot. I wouldn't say that's a sign that you should be paying attention to. However, if you say, I don't like this, I don't like when you do this, and they don't stop, I would take that as something that you may not want to go further with in the relationship. You set the boundary for what you're going to tolerate in the relationship and what you allow, what will continue. So as I've been through all these horrible relationships before, I have learned to set boundaries, even in friendship, even in, you know, whatever I'm dealing with people. You set the boundary of what you want to tolerate and what you will tolerate. If something's bothering you off bat and you say, hey, I don't like this, I don't like when you say this to me, you got to say something about it. And if that person does not change or try to change, then you need to back away completely. Because someone who loves you and respects you will try to make you comfortable. In my opinion.
Okay. When these women, the stories that they tell you, I think I heard one that it just creeps on, like the one of the TSA I played. It's just like I have some friend of mine that was hit by their spouse, and they had been together for years.
Mm-hmm.
Is there signs that, you know, I mean, all of a sudden, you know, there had to have been something to indicate her. So outside of just that indicating part, there's people that just go off. Just like you say, that they might have been self-medicated, you know. And
right. Right. Situations like that, it's hard to say, but if I'm with someone and we're together years and all of a sudden they just pop off and they hit me,
mm-hmm.
I would think that through those years there are some things that were pinpointing a problem that, like I said, we sometimes ignore it. If you see me every time you turn around, or maybe sometimes I walk around with an attitude, because I don't want to be bothered, or there's certain times or certain things that bother me, I may not pop off, but you'll be like, okay, I'm going to leave her alone today. You know what I'm saying? Maybe she's just not feeling it today. Or if that seems to be a pattern and then all of a sudden I pop off, it's like a teapot. It just gets hotter and hotter and hotter, and then it blows. I would imagine, I'm not a clinical psychologist or psychiatrist, but I would say that there had to be something going on long before that when that person popped off. People do snap, but there's always something that triggers that snap. Something had to happen leading up to it that makes that person snap. You have to always just pay attention. I guess in our daily lives, we just go on about our business and really don't pay attention to what's going on. If you have a certain friend that you're like, you know what, she really don't like this type of crowd, I'm not going to take her around these people. Or, you know, he don't want to go out with me, I'm not going to take him around these people. If you have to find yourself doing that, then something is wrong in that situation.
Okay.
So it's always good to pay attention. You know, pay attention to certain characteristics and personalities of people.
So with the young girls, because I've watched where I live at, where I watched several of these young girls that could be my daughters or grandkids, you know. Being beat up by these guys, and they keep going back to them, and you don't, mm-hmm. you know, we, you know, the way I'm gonna explain it is, I, you know, all the other older women in where I live at helped the young lady get out of the situation by talking mm-hmm. to her and all that, but she would wind right back up over there, getting beat up mm-hmm. again, and asking
the type of
why don't he love me. Wait a minute. She wants to know, why
Jesus.
Don't he love me? I said, what? You don't love yourself. I hope that wasn't too mean.
That is something so. No, go ahead.
Was it too mean?
No. No, it's not mean. It's just that I'm just remembering my own situation, because I was that 15-year-old girl. And for me, when I think back, because I question myself today, being an advocate and being, you know, someone that goes around and speak about what not to do, I did all of those what not to do. That's why it's so easy for me to talk about it. But I was 15, and for me, the what made me keep going back was the fear. I had intense fear for him and what he would do. Now, like I said, I started at 15 with him, but when I got to around 17, 18, 19 years old, and now I'm driving, I'm a little more independent, I had opportunities to leave, and I did. But when I would leave him, he would find me. He would, I don't know, I felt he just followed me. He would. He told me about places I had been that I didn't even know he was there. He told me what I had on. He told me what I wore, who I was speaking to, what I was doing. That will scare the mess out of a young child. You know what I mean? And you don't know what he would do. If he's watching me and doing all this, in my mind, I might as well go back to him. Like, don't he going to kill me? Not thinking being with him is going to kill me. But my fear was, I don't want him to find me somewhere and kill me, because that's what he was doing, stalking me. He has kidnapped me a couple of times from parties, from walking inside a club. I was at a party one time, and it was a wall full of DJs. One of those block parties. And I came there with four girls, and by the end of the night, my car was still there, and everybody was looking for me, and the police helicopter, because he saw me, grabbed me, and put me in the car with him and drove off in a crowd of people, and nobody helped me. Nobody said one single solitary word. And wow. By the end of the night, I had to calm him down and tell him I'll take him back for him to drive us from the canal.
You're listening to WAMRDB 1430, 1420, the woman station, the new look and feel of AM radio. Shout out to all my grown and sexy, elegant ladies out there. My name is Mario Coleman, a.k.a. The Next Level. I'll be coming to Covington, GA, in the Atlanta metro area to perform live and show the ladies the love and appreciation they need.
Oh, Lord. I'm sorry. Hello?
It's okay.
Hello? 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 Hello?
You're listening to WAMI.
Girl, I'm so sorry.
That's okay.
Oh, wow. It scared me to death. Because you had me scared. You scared the hell. Girl, you scared
I'm
me
so
bad.
Sorry.
I didn't know what to do. You
I'm
had
so
me.
Sorry.
I'm serious. I hit the wrong button. I was scared. I'm serious. I was scared. I'm sitting here, and I done hit everything. It's stuff going. Child, Lord, have mercy.
Well, this. Honestly, that episode was the scariest of my life.
Wow. No, it's scary because there you are with everybody around you. And this is the part I don't understand. Used to be a time where people would come to your rescue or tell the person, hey, man, you need to calm down or something, you know, but now people are just standing there watching people get murdered. This this
pulling
time
out their phones
that we live in.
Taking videos,
it's sad. And I think the pain for what you guys do is that you guys bring sanity back to. Can you hear me pretty good? Am I
yes.
on my headphones? Okay.
Yeah, I can hear you fine.
So what? So what I'm just, you know, you become fearful because you know nobody's going to help you. That's one of the things I think is a medium in terms of if you don't do what they say do, you know, that nobody's going to help you anyway. The first thing a person tells you is nobody's going to help you. You can cry, but nobody's going to come. And then when the police do show up, when the police do show up, 99% of the time, it's a male police officer who, just like we realized today, a sheriff killed his girlfriend, a wife, and they could be an abuser too, you know? So the men who are showing up, they are desensitized to the environment that's taking place.
Yes, I really believe
I think one of the suggestions that we really need to look at as we build the audience on this is how do we get legislation passed where women police, they're hiring more police officers for domestic violence itself, not after the fact, but before, when it's happening, where a domestic violence counselor is called to the scene of the actual situation so they can make an assessment so a woman can say, let me talk to her. Because you feel threatened because all these other men are around and they're sympathetic to the person that's hitting you. And you look and you feel, I've been in that situation where the police has said, well, they have their right to be here. I'm like, so look at my door.
Yep.
Well, you can't just throw them out. Okay, but isn't this some kind of violence to my property? Well, you got to let them come in.
Mm-hmm.
Which then makes that person, and that allows that person to feel like I got the upper hand, and I'm going to continue to use the system to turn this around. And that is something that I personally am dealing with today, right now. A lot of people have been trying to reach me today, and I'm like, how does the person that's doing the ass whooping have more rights than the person that's getting the ass whooping?
It's sad, and some things are just unbelievable, and it's crazy that you asked about legislation today, because I spoke with someone earlier, because my question is, like the abuser that abused his wife not too long ago, he went to jail. Now, this is the second charge of domestic violence. His bond was only $2,000, meaning he paid $200 to get out. He had a stay-away order from her, went right back to her house, threatened her again. She screamed, called the police. Police came. She said, if you all don't arrest him, he's going to kill me. I don't know what efforts they took to look for him, but that very next day she went to work. He came to her job, shot her in the head, execution style, and killed her. Now, my question to the lady who I was speaking to today, because she's very familiar with the court system and all of that, so I was asking her, what do we do? How can we get something in place where these abusers, once they've been charged before, and they've charged again, their bond is not that low. Their bond should be higher to get out. A piece of paper is not going to keep an abuser away from who he's trying to abuse. I was kidnapped and I had a restraining order on my ex-husband. He kidnapped me with a restraining order. I had police escort every night on the way home. They would watch me go up the stairs until I get in the house. He still kidnapped me because one night as I'm going up the stairs, he would come up the other stairs, and as they telling me goodbye, he's dragging me down the other stairs. When they want to get to you, they will get to you. He has climbed balconies. He has laid down in the grass watching me. When abuser wants to get to you, they will. So my question is, when they've been arrested before and they have several charges for domestic violence, why is it so easy for them to get out of jail when you know they're pissed that you called the police on them, number one, because you have the nerve to complain about being abused on. So they get mad at you for calling the police. And
the police get mad, you're saying? Yeah, the abuser, they're mad
if you call the police on them. No, the abuser. The abuser is upset that you called the police. And like one time my ex-husband, I called the police on him, and then I woke up, he's standing above me. Nobody was going to tell me he got out. And there should be something in place that say, hey, he's gotten out, you know, be careful, have somebody with you, take precautions or something. You don't even know these things until they get out. No one's telling you that they're out of jail because, I don't know, I guess it's their right to get bonded out and not to tell anyone. But if I'm filing a complaint or I'm saying someone abused me, I should know that he's getting out because I'm going to be the one he's coming to get. And those things are not in place. So I was definitely trying to find out today what we need to do, and I was just told it's not impossible, just a long process. But that's going to be a fight that we're
really
going to have to start.
It really isn't. One of the things that I'm proud of is that some of the political, some of the legislations that need to be passed has to just be drawn up into a declaration, and all we have to do is get enough two senators to sign off on the bill and get that passed. So there's Donzella James is a senior sitting state senator here in Atlanta, and she's been on our show and has supported Atlanta Mix Radio, the woman station, for ever since its creation. And that's something that we want to do. You know, we as a radio station, it's all right to have interviews and it's all right to have sponsorship, but you want to, we want to make sure that, just like I was telling you, that there's been a buzz already about our interview with you just the other day. And mm-hmm. the organization that we're partnering up with, I talked to the chapter president for the for our area, and you know, it's I want to make sure I say it's called Women. Oh boy, let me see here. I just want to make sure. Remember, I think we talked well armed leader, the well armed woman. That,
okay.
That's it. It's called the WELL Armed Woman. They had a national leadership conference already for 2017, but the TWAW is they're shooting chapters, and what they do is teach women about self defense, shooting, education, equipment. They empower women and train them on shooting and on carrying a concealed weapon and a lot of other things. So we have that. They talked to us today because one of the gentlemen, Clift Beeks, is a part of one of our business opportunities that we deal with, and he has daughters, and he heard this broadcast on last week, and he told mm-hmm. this woman, and we got together and chopped it up, and I'm joining because I'm going to be a well-armed woman too. A well-armed woman, like Madea say, peace be still.
Peace be still. I'm on their website now trying to see there's a chapter here because I'm looking for a class for a gun license class for the women here. So I'm looking on their website now to see if they have a chapter close to us. To see
We can get that for you. We have her coming on the show on Thursday. She's only black certified president of the there's a lot of certification. She's a black female NRA card carrying black woman, period.
Wow.
And
okay.
She says that I don't want to get into that part of it because I want her to be able to tell everybody, because I'm not fluent in it, but all I'm telling you is when a fool know you got a gun and you know how to use it, I'm telling you, it gives you peace of mind.
It gives you peace of mind. So we basically
are reaching out and building. I am building out just googobs of individuals to network across the country doing this particular part, which is dear to me. In every way, because I experienced domestic violence as a child coming up.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, and when you are a survivor of that coming up, you know, I look at the children that I watched and heard, you know, the kids are crying, he's beating on her. What is that? What's going in that child's mind? These are the things that I'm trying to understand. What's going through that kid's mind? How is this going to affect, like you said earlier, how is this going to affect the life of that person? Well, mm-hmm. after that relationship is over with, what stops that? What's in place for that you all have in place for people that have children? The survivors themselves have children. Is there any counseling for the children?
Sometimes, well, not with our organization as of yet. We just connected with some family therapists and a clinical psychiatric nurse for our summits and when we have our support groups and if someone needs, you know, further support. However, but there is local help. I know in Miami there is. There's help, there's counseling for the kids. It's just that there's services and a lot of people don't know how to reach them or don't know how to get to them. And they don't utilize them. But there are services for the children. I know that for sure. And there's counseling services for the mothers. As far as I know, when they go to the shelters, they definitely have counseling. For the ones who are trying to move forward, I'm not 100% sure that they're not in the shelter. But I know that we do. There is counseling in our area. There is.
For the children. Because
for
that's,
the children,
you know,
yeah.
that turns a child into a very hardened individual, and they don't know what love looks like. They become desensitized,
right?
And they become a second generation of domestic violence themselves.
Yeah,
and become
either the giver or the receiver.
Right, and. You know, it's there's a jokingly part about Mr. You know, Mr. was kicking what's her name? Whoopi Goldberg's tail. You know, what is it? Color Purple?
Yeah.
Remember he said he been a shame, Mr. And you know, these are some of the things that I just I don't incite violence. But I am a very high supporter of it. If you put your hands on me, I'm gonna make sure that you never put your hand on nobody else again. So, and that's why
I don't put
my hand on people. I don't touch people. My mom always said, "Keep your hands to yourself."
Keep your hands, yes. And I tell the young ladies as well, you can't be going and just popping up and punching on these boys and hitting them, and you expect, yes, men should not hit women. I teach my son that. Don't put your hands on your sister, but I teach her, don't put your hands on your brother. Because now if something happen, don't come crying and hollering at me about, "Mom, he hit me," when you hit him first. Keep your hands to yourself. I teach my kids that. And you know, and I something you said earlier about domestic violence being so out now, and is it getting worse? I'm not necessarily sure if it's getting worse, or is it being unveiled now, and more people are speaking out about it, and it's coming to the forefront. And now we have social media and everything; we see everything, we see more of everything now. Before, like when I was going through it, that was 17 years ago. And when I was going through it, some people saw it and they kept it moving. I will say maybe two or three people in my lifetime during that time may have asked him to stop or said something to him that made him stop. Other than that, people weren't trying to stop it. So it's not that it's more it's more out now. It's just that I'm sorry. While it's happening more, people are just doing more about it, I believe, or the victims are speaking out more, and it's being shown more. I believe the abusers are becoming more bold. They're not hiding it anymore. You know what I mean? Usually they'll probably beat you in the house or whatever. They don't care where they're doing it now. They're just doing it because they feel like it, or because you have the nerve to try to leave them. You know, I was reading up on some stuff yesterday. I was speaking in a conference yesterday on the panel, and I actually posted it today that 4,000 women die every year to the hands of their partner. And 75% of them have died leaving the relationship. 75% of 4,000 women were leaving when they were killed. So when people always judging and criticizing and like, why don't they just leave? Why are they there? That in a perfect world, you can pick up your bags and get your stuff and walk out the door and never deal with it again. But we're not living in the perfect world. You're living with someone who controlled you and who has abused you for so long that when that piece of control is walking out the door, they flip. And you're not going to leave them till they say so. So I'm not saying stay. I'm saying be strategic when you're leaving. You have to plan it
out
and take your time.
Hide in the open.
Yes. Yeah, hide in plain sight. Rapture, because
there you go.
You need support. You need support when you're leaving. You know, let someone know, hey, I'm trying to leave him. I need to go. If you can't get out of there without him, you know, everyone knows their spouse or partner's personality or whatever. If you can get out of there without him flipping, but you never know. You know what I'm saying? Even though he's not someone who normally flips, that may cause him to flip. I was telling another young lady, she was saying he was not abusive. He was, I mean, physically abusive, but he was emotionally abusive. He was very controlling, and she couldn't do this, that, and the other. And she still had to plan her way out of there. And we literally planned for a couple of months on how to leave him. And her leaving took so long because she didn't have a car, she didn't have a job, she didn't have all those things. So when she left, where was she going? I wasn't going to tell her to leave and be out in the street, you know where to go. We had to find a shelter that was available to take her right away. We had, you know, she had to have places to go. Because he was not physically abusive, it wasn't really a threat to her physically and her children physically, number one. Number two, he was in Haiti a lot. So the time that she was planning to leave him and take him stuff out the house, it was time he was in Haiti. So she was a little safer because there were months or weeks at a time when he was not in the country. So we had more time to plan, you know, her exit to get out of there. And that's what she did. She finally, you know, she got a car. She saved up some money, got a car. She parked it, you know, and then she was looking for part-time work. But then she also called around to the shelters. Me and her were calling shelters every other day for a bed. And when she finally got one available, she got out of there and she left. You know, women would be more depressed and more success. What's the word I'm looking for? I won't say the wrong word. Or more willing to go back if it's too hard out here in the street. It's too hard out here in real life if they can't make it on their own. Because if that abuser is their financial provider, if he's done everything for them, and he takes care of them, and now reality hits, okay, I got to take care of myself if I leave him. You know, they have to have the means and or the help to not go back, to know that they can move on. And that's why I go around empowering women and talking to them and trying to help them to the next step. Okay, what is it we need to do now? Okay, I need to find a job, but let's go ahead, let's go start looking for work. What do you know how to do? You know what I mean? Whatever it is you know how to do or you're willing to learn, we try to find them work that way. You know what I mean? We don't have any special connections. We just get on the phone and start calling and asking around, who's hiring? What are you doing? We have someone that needs a job. And that's what we go try to help them. Because when I became a survivor and I left the relationship, what helped me to stay away was to take care of myself. I got a job. I got my own apartment. I got a car. And I felt victorious. I felt like I could do this. You know, I could take care of me. It wasn't until I felt strong enough to do that is what kept me away from him, because I didn't need the financial stuff, the material stuff that kept me there in the first place.
Well,
I know I answered a bunch
of
questions at one time. I'm sorry.
I'm sorry?
No, I know I answered a bunch of things at one time. Sorry.
No, this is different. This is different. This is not like at the, this is our digital broadcast. So, ladies and gentlemen, we are talking with Miss Shonda Roberts out of Miami, Florida, talking about domestic violence. This is our outreach with Pain to Purpose. She is a survivor, and she turned her survival instinct into a way for other women to be able to map out a way to get out of the situations that they find themselves involved in. Some of it's traditional. Some of it's having to do with the man is the head of the household. Some of it's just things that we experience from the other parts of our life. So this is some national statistics that I got off of NCADV.org. They're saying that on average, nearly 20 people per minute are physically abused by an intimate partner in the United States. During 1 year, this equates to more than 10 million women and men. And then 1 in 3 women and 1 in 4 men, like you were saying, have been victims of some form of physical violence from an intimate partner within their lifetime. And then 1 of 4 women and 1 of 7 men have been victims of severe physical violence by their intimate partner in one lifetime. And they says on a typical day, there's more than 20,000 phone calls placed to domestic violence hotlines nationwide. And then the presence of a gun in a domestic violence situation increases the risk of homicides by 500%. And they're also stating that women between the ages of 18 and 24 are commonly abused by an intimate partner. 90% of domestic violence involves a weapon. There's domestic victimization is correlated with a high rate of depression and suicide behaviors. And then only 34% of people who are injured by their intimate partners receive medical care for their injuries. So as we get back into more of the show with Ms. Roberts, some of those things are
Those are reported.
Statistics. Those are reported. And what we're seeing now is a lot has not been reported.
Right.
Out of fear. Did you not report yours at the beginning?
I didn't. Go ahead, Karima.
Do you know why you might have not reported it?
The very first time, I was in complete shock. I was like, what the hell? Because I met him. He was Prince Charming, and honey, he spoiled me, bought me everything I thought I wanted. So when that, and this is a clear indication of, or example of, pictures to the sign. He was talking to his friends, and I said something. I was like, ready to go or whatever. He got upset that I said something, took me down the street into the woods, pulled me out of the car, hit on me, put me back in the car, drove back to where his friends were, and kept on talking like nothing had happened. That was clear indication I need to get up out of there. And I was number one, embarrassed, because I know they know what happened. And then they didn't see it just by the actions and how his demeanor. His whole face changed when I talked back to him. And that was a clear indication to leave, and I didn't. Because so much fear set in, and that's what he was doing, marking the fear. You know what I mean? Like, okay, if you do it again, this is what's going to happen. And I didn't call the police. I didn't tell anyone, because by the time I got home, he was already, I'm sorry, I love you. I don't know what happened. I don't know what made me do it. I don't know. You know, I love you. I'm just so crazy about you. You just make me so crazy. And, you know, tell you all these things and make you kind of feel it's your fault. So in my mind, I'm like, okay, if I don't do it again, this won't happen again. So that cycle kept going on. It wasn't for a long time before I ever called the police. And when I called the police, when you were talking about police before, I want to tell you, even when they send a woman officer with the male officer, they're just as non-empathetic as the men. You may, and I don't want to talk about all police officers, because I mean, I did not encounter any that gave a damn what happened. But I did, I know that there are some out there. But I, like you said, they become desensitized. They don't, I'm not saying they don't care. I guess they feel it's another case of she's not going to call the police. I mean, she's not going to go to court, so why is she calling the police? You know what I mean? And they do become desensitized from, but I believe they need someone, I believe they need more training on how to deal with domestic violence victims. Because if I'm calling police to come and help me out of this situation, and he's been telling me, if you call the police, I'm going to kill you, or if you leave, I'm going to kill you. Now the police are here, and they're saying, well, he has a right to be here. You need to leave. You know what I'm saying? They'll tell me I have to go because the lease is on, you know, his name is on the lease or whatever. Even if I stay there, they're suggesting maybe you should leave and he should stay, or whatever, vice versa. But if I'm calling the police to offer me some aid and some help, and they're not showing any remorse or concern, how does that give me comfort into saying, okay, when you leave, police officer, and tomorrow happens, I call you again. You know what I'm saying? How am I feeling safe and secure? Because you're not making me feel safe and secure. Right. You don't feel that.
Exactly.
So eventually you stop calling the police. you stop calling the police. Even when you go to front of the judge, it's like, okay, how many times have we done this to you? You know what I mean? Yeah, we know. You know you shouldn't be in a situation, but that's not what you need to hear. You need to hear encouragement and empowering you and telling you you don't deserve this. You're a queen. You don't need this, and, you know, you can do better. What is it? How can I help you out of the situation? That's what people need when they have that encounter with them. They don't need why are you here and why won't you leave. Those type of questions they can't answer. They don't know. They don't know. It's a question I still can't answer. All I could tell you is I was afraid for my life because when I left him, he found me. What do you do in that situation, Karima? How do you run from someone who climbs over your balcony? How do you run from someone who was standing on the other side of the stairway when the police is on the left side and he on the right? And when the police pull off, he coming to get you. How do you run from that? After a while, I just stopped running. I stopped running. I let him just do whatever because I got tired of running from him. I didn't feel safe. I didn't feel safe. I said before, when abuser wants to come get you, they'll come get you.
Well, I was looking at the National Coalition of Against Domestic Violence again, and the stalking and they call it femicide. They're saying 76% of women murdered by an intimate partner were stalked first, and then 85% of the women who survived murder attempts were stalked, and then 89% of femicide victims who had been physically assaulted before their murder had also been stalked. And then 54% of femicide victims reported stalking to the police were killed by their stalkers. So you're right. I mean, these things, the stalking part is what I would think would be an indicator in other forms of violence where, you know, this... And the thing about it is, you're sitting here and we're talking about domestic violence, and you know, and there's a national hotline, you guys, that people need help. It's 1-800-799-7233. Again, that is 1-800-799-7233. We're encouraging. We're encouraging this conversation. We want people to tune in on every Tuesday evening. You can call at 516-387-1251 every Tuesday evening, Eastern or Central Time. I'll get it figured out. But we're going to continue this. We're going to have, well, I hadn't did this in a minute, so we're just picking up on our digital broadcast. So our podcast can continue to stretch out further than our AM broadcast. But I just wanted to let people know that although you are out doing outreach, you yourself are in danger as well because people do not like they do not like people helping the victim. You do. I'm sure Mr. Roberts has brought that to your attention, right?
Yes. All the time. Watch your back. Pay attention to what you're doing. You see something wrong, don't go. You know, he's always telling me, I'm always at the shelters. And I have to be careful, too, because I don't want to have the women endangered as well. So we always make sure, you know, we pay attention to that when they're being followed. And because we use social media as a platform to continue to bring awareness and continue to get help and get donations, someone stalking could pay attention to my page and know I'm going to a shelter, you know what I'm saying? And know where we are and pay attention to where we're going and maybe looking for a spouse. So we're always vigilant and being careful and paying attention on where we're going and when we're going. Because if there's a stalker out there trying to get someone and they see us getting ready to go in the shelter, they can come in and get us first because we're going there. They don't want them help. And they get more upset that they left them and that they're getting help. Oh my God, that burns them up more than anything. That you left them and getting help from someone else. That some stalkers are really, really aggressive with their stalking. Very aggressive. If they were anything like my ex-husband, I promise you, there have been times I go out the door and I'm just petrified over my front door. Literally standing there. it's a scary thing. Stalking is, well, to me, was worse than the abuse. It's because you don't know what's happening. It's so scary.
Yeah, because they are terrible. It's the abuser who is using stalking to terrorize and threaten and create substantial emotional distress for their victims, the family members, and the third parties. This is what their goal is. Their goal is to terrorize a person. You know, I personally believe that people like that have a way of being not as bold and bad if they run up on the wrong person. You know, like the story you said about your husband.
Right.
Like your now husband running up because I looked at him on the picture. He just looked. He took up the whole frame. That's a big dude. I said, good Lord. I said, Lord. I know he was like, oh, Lord. He probably looked and said, man, you know, I'm going to keep moving. Yeah, you know what I'm saying?
He ain't smiled too much.
That's what I'm he know how to
man,
handle that nice
giant.
Too, boy.
Yeah,
I'm just saying. I think I friend requested him. After I seen him, I said, "Oh Lord, he's a big dude." I mean, he took up the whole camera. He ain't fat, y'all. He was just huge. I said, "God,
he is
Jesus.
Not that big." That's just.
It's just a picture.
That was just a picture. Yeah, he ain't that big.
How tall is he?
I think like 5'9". He's like. He's 5'9". My fat, no, I'm lying.
Oh,
he's about 5'11", I guess. Because I'm 5'7".
Okay,
he's a little taller than me, yeah.
Yeah, he looked it. I said, well, good Lord. And then, oh, boy, I guess he tried to, he tried to run up on you, and he looked up and saw him, and he went the other way, right?
Yes. Went up the other way quickly. And he has not crossed my path since. And when he does see us, In places, he turns around and goes the other way. You know, he don't bother me. I don't see him anymore, but when I was seeing him, he doesn't bother me anymore at all. At all. I thought that day would never come.
Oh, boy. You know what I think about people like that? You know, like Madea told the girl, get you a pot of grits. And when he go to hit you, throw them grits on him. And then just get a good cast iron pan. And that's what you got to do. You know what? Well, I really don't.
Yeah.
I really,
you
got to
defend yourself.
You know, you got to defend yourself. And if you don't love yourself enough to defend yourself, then you got a problem. You know, I don't know if it's a reverse stalking situation, but that's what I'm involved in. I was accused of stalking somebody, the person I was married to. And I was like, how am I stalking somebody when I don't even care where you at? I don't even know where you at. I don't care. I don't know. I was like, who is this letter to? And I was like, what? So you got, but my point of it is you got some women who know how to utilize the system on a negative level. And it makes it bad for people who need to actually get services. But can you hold on for a minute? We got to do a couple of commercial here, and
no
we'll be right back if you got a minute.
Yes, go ahead.
Okay, great.
Women around the world use sanitary napkins and tampons every day, knowing little to nothing about the harmful and potentially dangerous materials used to manufacture them. Because of this, millions of women are forced to suffer in silence. In the United States, the Food and Drug Administration does not require companies to list the ingredients contained in sanitary napkins and tampons. Yet the average woman uses more than 15,000 sanitary napkins or uses tampons for more than 100,000 hours over her lifetime.
You really don't know what's in it. I mean, I don't think any of us really know, especially, you know, some of the new pads that maybe have a spongy type texture that's supposed to hold more. Well, what exactly is that? What's that made out of? We don't know. So then there's questions of how does that affect our health? You know, with things coming out that, you know, baby powder and talc are dangerous and cause ovarian cancer, what other things are we exposing our very sensitive areas to that could end up being a problem later on?
Internationally, it's even worse. A recent report from UNICEF and the World Health Organization cites that at least 500 million girls and women globally lack adequate facilities for managing their periods. In most schools, girls have to trek to the nurse's office to ask for a pad or tampon, as if menstruating is an illness rather than a natural function. In some parts of the world, girls simply drop out of school once they start menstruating. The manufacturing process of these menstrual aids has been known to cause serious damage to the environment. The toxic byproducts of producing tampons include poisons like dioxin and furan. In fact, conventional sanitary pads can contain the equivalent of about 4 plastic bags. Synthetics and plastic restrict airflow and trap heat and dampness, potentially promoting yeast and bacteria growth in a woman's vaginal area. Conventional sanitary pads can also contain other potentially hazardous ingredients, such as odor neutralizers and fragrances. How do tampons and pads get that ultra-white clean look? Usually chlorine bleach, which can also create toxic dioxin and other disinfection byproducts. According to an EPA draft report, dioxin is a serious public health threat that has no safe level of exposure. To make matters worse, tampons create a favorable environment for bacterial growth.
Certainly there's a lot of plastic involved with pads and the issues with tampons and the history. You have to be careful with toxic shock syndrome and stuff just because of what it's made out of. It's kind of a nidus of bacteria that's not so good for patients.
Micro tears in the vaginal wall from tampons allow bacteria to accumulate when left too long. One infamous risk is toxic shock syndrome, or TSS, caused by poisonous toxins from bacteria. TSS is a life-threatening condition that affects women under 30 most. While any woman using tampons can get TSS, over 60% of TSS fatalities happen in women ages 15 to 24. For too long, these facts have been conveniently swept under the rug, while hundreds of millions of women suffer with no alternatives. Until now. Introducing Cherish Premium Sanitary Napkins by Inspire. Cherish pads have been designed by women for women.
Radio, Spreaker, YouTube, live stream, Facebook Live, SoundCloud, and Blog Talk Radio. Tune in locally on 1420 AM, Tuesday nights, 8 p.m. to 10 p.m., and Wednesdays from 6 p.m. to 7 p.m. The call-in number is 470-231-1714 or 472-311-225. We are WAMRDB, the Woman Station, the new look and feel of AM radio.
All right, you guys, welcome back. We are sitting here talking about domestic violence, the outreach with pain to purpose. The founder, Ms. Shonda Roberts, located down in Miami, Florida. What is domestic violence? Domestic violence is a willful intimidation, physical assault, battery, assault, and other abusive behavior as part of a systematic pattern of power and control perpetrated by an intimate partner against one another. It includes physical violence, sexual violence, threats, emotional and psychological abuse. The frequency and severity of domestic violence varies drastically. So, why does it matter? Did you know some of these things that we're talking about today? Sexual assault, stalking, homicide, physical, mental effects, economic effects. I think we covered a lot of that already. Shonda, which just basically you summed it all up. You know, from an economic standpoint, they're the breadwinner. Intimidation. Sexual assault. Now, if you're married, I think that has, this is 1 out of 5 women and 1 of 59 men in the United States are raped during his lifetime, or 9.4 women in the United States have been raped by their intimate partner. Have you found a sexual assault from the ladies that you've come across these last 2 years from their partners?
A few of them, yes, they would. Well, one of them, her partner was her pimp, but he was still her partner. And, you know, her story was very touching because she had been on the street since 13 years old. And when we gave her the purse, she said she had never owned a purse before. And that purse meant so much to her that she went to telling us her story about the sexual abuse. And after her being in the street for a certain amount of time that night, if she did not make enough money, yes, he would rape her violently, assault her. And she went through that for years. And there have been times where even my own ex-husband would force me to have sex with him. And it's not. And at the time, you know, like I said, I was younger. Like, you don't know that, okay, this is my husband, because I did marry him at 19. And a lot of people always tell you, well, that's your husband. He can't sexually assault you. Yes, they can. That is sexual assault. You know what I mean? It's not, no is no. I don't care who says it. No is no. And, you know, a lot of the women I do come in contact with, they have not divulged that much yet, but a couple of them have, and they do have experienced it. I work closely right now with a young lady who has been a victim of sex trafficking. Well, who was a victim of sex trafficking. Now she's an advocate, and she goes around talking about it. She was 11 years old when she was in sex trafficking. So it's happening more and more. Now we're talking about sexual assault. Sex trafficking is on the rise. It's happening so much, and I believe they said Miami is the second biggest place for sex trafficking. I believe that's what someone told me the other night. So it's really
and Atlanta is number
out.
One. And,
yeah.
And Atlanta
and it's happening
is number
so
one.
Much. Mm-hmm. You know, and it's so yeah, it spills over to that. You know, I mean, a lot of people who are being sexually assaulted, you know, are in those type of relationships, and they think that, well, I'm married to him, or we're dating, it's not rape, or it's not sexual assault. It is. It's still abuse. All that's abuse. This lady came up to me and told me, she said, you know what? I don't think I'm being abused. I'm like, why do you say that? What's going on? So, well, he don't hit me. You know, she said he's real mean. He talks to me any kind of way. He disrespects in front of my family, and I don't like it. Not my family, my friends. And I don't like it, but, you know, I want to leave him, but I don't think he's abusing me. I said, repeat what you just told me slower and say it again. Because the fact that you're even contemplating, you know something's not right. Do you think he's supposed to talk to you the way you say he's talking to you? Does that make you feel good?
Wow.
You know, a lot of people think because they're verbally abusive, it's not abuse. And it's still abuse. No one should make you feel lower than the dirt in the earth, on the ground. And when you're feeling that way and they're treating you that way, it's abuse.
You know, that says a lot. That speaks a lot to where and what a person thinks of themselves. And so that in itself is, it leads to the physical. It does.
Mm-hmm.
I think
once
you open up the door for anything, it opens up the door for a whole bunch of stuff. A lot of people say, well, you know, you're really strict about a lot of things. No, I'm not gonna open up the door for things to happen to me. Once you do me a work certain way one time, I'm like, okay, I'm gonna give you a pass. But the second time you do me some kind of way, I'm gonna be like, okay, is it me or is this some bullshit? And then the third time, I ain't got nothing else to say, because the best thing for me to do is just distance myself until you might need to go ahead and leave my presence.
Right.
I don't care what that is. That could be in business, that could be in my personal life, or that could be in any parts of my life. That's just who I am. When I'm ready for a person to leave, I will kind of let you know in every manner that it's time for you to go, and it's probably detrimental to your health if you don't leave. Because my thing is, you're not going to sleep. Nope, hold on. You're not going to sleep in my house after you done hit me. Your best bet is to make sure you never come back again. You know, and just like I told y'all on the radio, I opened up my door, and they went flying up in the air with that old steel Jeep Cherokee I got parked up there. And I meant that. I was not going to be – I watched that for years. I would never do that to anybody because I grew up in it, and I don't want to see it happen. And I think probably I am the wrong person to have a gun, because I think if from what I witnessed, I heard it, I didn't see it. You know, you hear the screaming, you know, but you don't actually see the punching. But I think if I actually saw a guy hit a woman right in front of me and she just was like wailed out, I would shoot him in his foot. I would shoot him in his foot.
You gonna go, Miss Kareem, you gonna go to jail. You can't do that.
My mind can't wrap itself around it, because when you watch that as a child, you know, that it's something that you really never forget.
I can't watch it either.
So,
there's no way you can do that in front of me either. I understand what you're saying, because it boils you up. And like I said, I was that woman where I wanted someone to help me, and they didn't help me. You know what I mean? So, no, I couldn't sit around and watch someone do that to someone and not say anything. Even if it's just picking the phone and calling the police, say something, do something. Don't just sit there and watch it.
Yeah.
That's not a mind your business moment.
No, it's not. It's not. You people don't realize that. So we're talking again with Ms. Shonda Roberts out of Miami, Florida. We're talking about why women are dying at the hands of the ones that's supposed to love them. Want to know why. Domestic violence is at an all-time high. Why? This is the beginning of a series for domestic violence outreach, for domestic violence, a national platform that we've been involved in since the beginning of Atlanta Mix Radio. How can people get in contact with Pain the Purpose?
Yes, Pain the Purpose is on all social media, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and a little bit of Snapchat. I'm learning Snapchat still. We are at Pain, the number 2, Purpose 76, all across the board. Pain, number 2, Purpose 76. That's on Facebook, Twitter, Snapchat, and Instagram. And our website is Pain, number 2, Purpose76.org.
All right, we're going to get up out of here tonight. We're going to ask people to tune in, and you'll start to see an outlay of all of these shows. And we're going to be having some professional people on next week. We'll be talking about psychological abuse next week. So we'll have a clinical psychiatrist on, and we're going to go all the way down through all of the compartments that I'm seeing here on FACTS, on the National Coalition Against Domestic Violence. There is a National Domestic Violence Hotline. is 1-800-799-SAFE or 7233. 1-800-799-7233. As a radio broadcaster and a GM, we're asking other broadcasters and programmers to set up a hotline so that women can have safe places to run if they're in a situation. So there are some things that we're going to be doing, and we want to thank everybody for tuning in to Atlanta Mix, our digital broadcast, which is taking off, and we're making some great moves when it comes down to our brand and our brand being a part of women and women of all different nationalities, not just black, white, Asian, transgender. Women, they're experiencing a high amount of domestic violence and murder. So we're bringing on Stan Lucas and a whole team of people across the country to support transgender women. And so we are doing what we're supposed to do at Atlanta Mix Radio, the woman station, and we want to make sure that everybody has an opportunity to reach out to us for this particular show. You can always call in at 516-387-1251, and you can reach us on AtlantaMixRadio.com and send out an email on Facebook, Instagram, what's the other one? Twitter. So, again, we are Atlanta Mix Radio, and Ms. Roberts, we appreciate your time tonight. Apologize
for
the technical difficulties, but, you know, today wasn't one of those
days. We got it done.
That's all right. Y'all, we're going to get up out of here. We thank y'all for tuning in.
Good night.
SoundCloud, and Blog Talk Radio. Tune in locally on 1420 AM, Tuesday nights, 8 p.m. to 10 p.m., and Wednesdays from 6 p.m. to 7 p.m. The call-in number is 470-231-1714 or 470-231-1225. We are WAMIDB, the Woman Station, the new look and feel of AM radio.
Your week. I know it's easy to spiral into a cycle of hopelessness when the storms of life set in. It's easy to doubt when the circumstantial evidence surrounding you points to failure. But in those daunting times, there are two words that can shift the course of your destiny and resurrect a seemingly dead situation. And those two words are, but God. Ephesians 2:4 says, but God, who is rich in mercy, loved us. I dare you today to use the but God disclaimer against any mountain and watch it be removed. Use it against any storm and watch the storm be still. Instead of placing a period at the end of your horror story, place the interjection but God and allow God to rewrite your ending. This is Pastor Sonia with your motivational moment to kickstart your week. Have a blessed and prosperous day.
Today has been one of those days, and I appreciate what we are trying to do with domestic violence outreach. We attain the purpose. I want y'all to tune in on Tuesday night right here on Blog Talk Radio at Atlanta Mix Radio. www.blogtalkradio.com. Reach out to us on Facebook, Twitter, Blog Talk, Spreaker, Mixcloud, Facebook Live, YouTube.
Women around the world use sanitary napkins and tampons every day, knowing little to nothing about the harmful and potentially dangerous materials used to manufacture them. Because of this, millions of women are forced to suffer in silence. In the United States, the Food and Drug Administration does not require companies to list the ingredients contained in sanitary napkins and tampons. Yet the average woman uses more than 15,000 sanitary napkins or uses tampons for more than 100,000 hours over her lifetime.
You really don't know what's in it. I mean, I don't think any of us really know, especially, you know, some of the new pads that maybe have a spongy type texture that's supposed to hold more. Well, what exactly is that? What's that made out of? We don't know. So then there's questions of how does that affect our health? You know, with things coming out that, you know, baby powder and talc are dangerous and cause ovarian cancer, what other things are we exposing our very sensitive areas to that could end up being a problem later on?
Internationally, it's even worse. A recent report from UNICEF and the World Health Organization cites that at least 500 million girls and women globally lack adequate facilities for managing their periods. In most schools, girls have to trek to the nurse's office to ask for a pad or tampon, as if menstruating is an illness rather than a natural function. In some parts of the world, girls simply drop out of school once they start menstruating. The manufacturing process of these menstrual aids has been known to cause serious damage to the environment. The toxic byproducts of producing tampons include poisons like dioxin and furan. In fact, conventional sanitary pads can contain the equivalent of about 4 plastic bags. Synthetics and plastic restrict airflow and trap heat and dampness, potentially promoting yeast and bacteria growth in a woman's vaginal area. Conventional sanitary pads can also contain other potentially hazardous ingredients, such as odor neutralizers and fragrances. How do tampons and pads get that ultra-white, clean look? Usually chlorine bleach, which can also create toxic dioxin and other disinfection byproducts. According to an EPA draft report, dioxin is a serious public health threat that has no safe level of exposure. To make matters worse, tampons create a favorable environment for bacterial growth.
Certainly, there's a lot of plastic involved with pads and the issues with tampons and the history. You have to be careful with toxic shock syndrome and stuff just because of what it's made out of. It's kind of a nidus of bacteria that's not so good for patients.
Micro tears in the vaginal wall from tampons allow bacteria to accumulate when left too long. One infamous risk is toxic shock syndrome, or TSS, caused by poisonous toxins from bacteria. TSS is a life-threatening condition that affects women under 30 most. While any woman using tampons can get TSS, over 60% of TSS fatalities happen in women ages 15 to 24. For too long, these facts have been conveniently swept under the rug, while hundreds of millions of women suffer with no alternatives. Until now. Introducing Cherish Premium Sanitary Napkins by Inspire. Cherish pads have been designed by women for women.
Now syndicated. Listen on the World Wide Web, Atlanta Mix Radio, Spreaker, YouTube, live stream, Facebook Live, SoundCloud, and Blog Talk Radio. Tune in locally on 1420 AM, Tuesday nights.